This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross. We're talking about the Pentagon Papers, the top secret history of the U.S. involvement in Vietnam based on classified documents exposed by Daniel Ellsberg. The documents were first revealed in a series of articles by the New York Times 50 years ago this week. But the Nixon administration tried to prevent further revelations from coming out. To pick up the story, let's listen to an excerpt of an interview Terry did with Ben Bradley, who with Washington Post publisher Katherine Graham made the decision to publish the Pentagon Papers. Terry spoke with Ben Bradley in 1995. He died in 2014 at the age of 93. Here's Terry.
Bradley was the executive editor of the Washington Post from 1968 to 1991. The biggest story covered under Bradley's watch was Watergate, which forced the resignation of President Nixon. The first big risk Bradley took was publishing the Pentagon Papers, the top-secret documents that revealed the history of the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. The New York Times had already published several installments, but the Justice Department got an injunction against the paper, preventing it from publishing further excerpts. Then the Pentagon Papers were leaked to the Post. I asked Bradley why it was important for the Post to publish the Pentagon Papers.
Failure to publish after the New York Times had published would have relegated the Post to a status of a kind of a pro-government establishment organization, which didn't want to take on the government, didn't want to fight for its constitutional rights. And it seems to me it would have forever relegated us to sort of second-class citizenship. It wasn't my decision. I wanted to publish from day one, moment one. It was Katherine Graham's decision, and it made all future decisions of an editorial nature at the Washington Post kind of automatic and easy.
Well, what were the risks?
Well, there were some interesting risks because this was a civil suit. If we had been enjoined, and mind you, no newspaper in the history of the country had ever been stopped from publishing something it wanted to publish beforehand, prior restraint. So that was a wonderful principle to fight for. The other thing is that if we had been convicted of that, if the judge had stopped us from publishing something, the Nixon administration was, it was quite obvious, was going to go after us on criminal violations, violating the code against publishing confidential and national security matters. Had we been convicted of that, you cannot own television stations if you are a convicted felon. And that would have been a felony. And we had about $100 million of television stations that we would have lost. The Post had just gone public, and the New York Stock Exchange shares in the Post were offered for sale for the first time to the public. And that was seriously threatened. So it was no casual decision that was involved.
There's a great story you tell about a phone call that I think really took a lot of chutzpah to get a... to get a friend of yours who was a judge on the phone so you could get his advice. But, of course, he was arguing a case in court at the time. Tell us what you did.
Well, he wasn't a judge. He was a
lawyer. I meant a lawyer.
It was Edward Bennett
lawyer,
Williams, yeah. Who was the famous defense attorney and a friend of mine for already 20 years. And he was, he would have defended us had he been in Washington, but he was trying a case in Chicago. I called up the editor of the Chicago Sun-Times, Jim Hoag, and said, I need to get a message to Edward Bennett Williams in such and such a courthouse immediately. And the message was, please call me, urgent. And in a matter of minutes, Williams called me back. And I talked for about 12 minutes and said, this is what we've got. This is what we want to do. These are the documents. This is what the New York Times has done. This is what the court, it was First Circuit in New York, had enjoined them from. And we want to publish. And I want you to tell me whether you think we should and why. And he sort of was silent for a split second, a split minute. And finally said, you've got to publish it. You've just got to do it. Because it wasn't in a sense of Plessy versus Ferguson that we had the right to blah, blah, blah. But he just sensed in his guts that to become an important player in the American scene, we had to do it.
So how much of the decision to publish was so that the Post could become a more respected player And how much of it was all the lofty principles about freedom of the press?
That's a good question, too, because, in the last, it was 7,000 pages, although we only had 4,000 of them. We got them at 10:30 in the morning, and we published at 10:30 that night. No one ever read the Pentagon Papers. They really didn't, you know. We could only read, each of us read sections of it, then we for about 8 hours we read, and then had a news conference and decided what we could publish. What mystified us all was that the Pentagon Papers ended before President Nixon took office, and therefore he was talking about the Johnson administration and the Kennedy administration and the Eisenhower administration. That's what the Pentagon makers Pentagon Papers were about. I think it dealt with the origins of the most important event in the middle of the 20th century, and therefore it had an intrinsic importance to it. But we also, it was a principle that is really fundamental to a free press. We've got to be able to publish what we want, then get punished if we did wrong, then get pursued privately by people that we may have libeled or publicly for violating the law.
Now, give me a sense of what your style was like when you were making your case to Katharine Graham and to the lawyers. Did you make speeches about freedom of the press? Did you insult your opponents in the newsroom? What was your style?
No, I had no opponents in the newsroom. I had the lawyers to worry about.
The lawyers, yeah, okay.
All of this was taking place in my house in Georgetown, and we had two fairly large rooms. In one of them was sort of a temporary city room where a bunch of reporters and a couple of news aides and a copy editor or two were actually reading the documents, making up their mind what story to run, what story could they get into shape to run that night. And in the other room, we had the lawyers and the representatives of the owners and a couple of editors from the editorial page. And I shuttled between the two, trying to make up my mind and learn the content, and then trying to steer the conversation to the verdict I wanted. There was no point in trying to say we've got to do it and threaten to quit, because then even if you won that, you'd win it leaving a great scars and wounds in personal relationships. So we had to do it sort of gently and listen to everybody and listen to their arguments, try to understand them, and then try to counter them.
Do you thrive on making these complicated decisions, or were these like Malox moments for you? You'd be reaching for the medicine.
Well, this wonderful quality of journalism, if you make a mistake, it's out there for everybody to see.
Yeah.
And it stays there, and, it goes right bang into the history books, and it's there are no known device that you can erase a daily newspaper. I love it. Yeah, I do love the sense that you're dealing with important issues and that you're going to be fair and you're going to be honest, but you're not going to back down.
Ben Bradley was the executive editor of the Washington Post at the time the Post published the Pentagon Papers. Terry Gross interviewed him in 1995. He died at age 93 in 2014. This is Fresh Air.